Thanks for tuning in to the Medevac Podcast, powered by the Robert Irvine Foundation, whose mission is to support and strengthen the physical and mental well-being of our nation's heroes and their families. I'm one of your hosts, David Reed.
And I'm your other host, Christian Myers. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Medevac Podcast. If you're new here, there's a price for the show. You have to share it with a friend or family member if you get something out of today's episode. Our guest is pretty cool today. You're going to get something out of it. Our guest is Waco Hoover.
Welcome, Waco.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Highly appropriate for you being in Texas as well.
Yes.
Name you after the incident?
No. Fortunately, no. It wasn't consummated there either. So. Yeah.
Just by happenstance.
Yes.
Waco is a Marine veteran. He spent 4 years as a Marine infantry veteran from 97 to 01. Then he's now been a very successful entrepreneur, businessman. He is the founder of XLive. Chairman of the Be the One Project, the American Legion, and the, I guess, director, right, of MCON?
Co-founder
yeah. of MCON, which is going to be the largest military convention in the world. So,
in the world?
In the world.
Entire.
Yes.
Is that that's the goal, at least.
Yeah, right? the goal is to turn it into the largest celebration gathering of the military community.
Nice. So we're going to dive into that in a little bit, probably a little towards the middle here. But MCON stands for Military Convention, and it's like the Comic-Con version of the military space.
Exactly. Right.
But let's rewind it a little bit, and I wonder if they had a compilation video of every time I said rewind it back. Let's rewind it back.
Just take that back.
Let's take it back a little bit. But let's start with, you know, how you were inspired to join the military, how you landed into the Marines, and why, for the love of God, you did infantry.
Glutton for punishment.
Yes.
To answer the last question first. My family all served the Marine Corps, both mm-hmm. grandfathers. Father did 2 tours in Vietnam, 82nd Airborne. Like the things that I do now and today were really influenced by that. His experience coming back, not knowing what PTSD is, really struggling with a lot of those things, left an indelible mark on our family. Cost us marriage, my mother, like, we didn't have a close relationship until I actually joined the Marine Corps at 18. Mm-hmm. And then we had this point of commonality that just didn't exist before. And we were able to develop a really amazing relationship, you know, up until, you know, it passed away. Mm-hmm. And so that was a huge part of influencing why I wanted to join the military. And I remember, you know, I think I was atypical when I joined, going in as an enlisted infantry guy. And all my friends and my family, they're like, why aren't you just going to college? Like, you know, good grades, athlete, et cetera, varsity athlete. And I was like, well, I just don't, it just seemed too stale. I'm just kind of bored to go and do that. And
more.
Exactly. Yeah. I wanted some adventure. Just the Marine Corps appealed to me, the Esprit de Corps, when looking at all the different branches. And my dad told me, his son, I support you, whatever you do, just don't join the goddamn Marine Corps. And I joined the Marine Corps.
Yeah. Interesting, your silent objection.
Yes. Yes, yes.
And you know, infantry was always in your sights, or?
That's what I wanted to do when I signed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you're going to do it, might as well do it.
Right? Exactly. And then I wanted to be an infantry scout and a Commonwealth Bible instructor, different phases of my tour.
Okay. Yeah. Where were you stationed at?
Kaneohe Bay, and then we go out to Okinawa for 7 months at a time, and then from there we just deploy over.
So this is 1997, like relatively easygoing peacetime.
Yeah, the we had two things come up that it was like close for us to like go do something, and that was East Timor at the time, if you guys even remember that, Southeast Asia. And then there was some stuff going on in kind of Cambodia as well. And then, you know, we were part of a group called JTF 510, which was just a Clipper Action Force. We never did anything with it, but we had our bags packed, 2 hours, wheels up to where we were going in the theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then, yeah, we didn't, other than doing some really interesting, we call it MedNet Medcaps, where, if you guys are familiar with that at all, but on float, you fly go around in different parts of Southeast Asia, Thailand, Malaysia, Philippines, like the poorest, disgusting areas you've seen. Yeah. And the Marines were the security element, and then the Navy and the Army, the CVs would build, you know, structures and things for the local population, vaccinate animals, dental care,
nice.
Shots, things like that. That was, as a young person, that was really rewarding to see how to help those people, but then also think about like how good we have it here. Mm-hmm. Like it's, we're really quick to take shots at America, but we have it really, really good. The poorest of the poor here have it so much better than the poorest of the poor anywhere else on the planet. And it's true. It's something that will never leave me, that experience. Mm.
Yeah, and that's perspective, right? And something that a lot of individuals here don't have. And maybe it's the fault of the, you know, military doing such a good job protecting those from realizing what real life is. But, you know, you step outside of the borders of this country, like, anywhere you go. I mean, you know, I just got back from England, and too, like, everything is just so condensed and so consolidated and so crammed. And, you know, having a 600-square-foot home is nice, and that's fine for you. So we, like, in this country have, like, overindulgence and just a sense of entitlement. So, and you just see that being emphasized more and more lately. Mm. But, you know, something interesting happens during your time in 1997 to start, and then 2001 rolls around, and then all of a sudden, you know, the world kind of unites against here.
You know, it does, yeah. And it was interesting how my story kind of unfolded. And so I got out in the summer of 2001 in July, moved to New York City to start my undergrad at NYU August 16th. And then I was out running that morning when the planes went into it. When I first went on my run, everyone was like, oh, there's a, looking up the World Trade Center. It was a fire. Nobody knew what was going on. And so I
And you visually seen?
I saw it. And then left and went out on the East River and went up north under the Brooklyn Bridge and farther up for a run. And as I'm coming back, people are like, don't go down there, man. We're under attack. And I'm like, well, I don't know what that means. You know what I mean? And you're just trying to process that for a moment. Yeah. And so come down, finish my run. And then things are really starting to get kind of really hectic, and you can tell there's something bad happening, but we still don't know what it is. And again, I had keys, a tank top, and shorts, so I literally have zero communication, anything at all. And so I get down to the South Street Seaport, the lower part of Manhattan, start walking up to my apartment on the cobble street stones there before you get up to Water Street, and that's when the first tower comes down. And so, do you remember the Godzilla movies at all? That's visually what it looked like. And I actually look back on it now and I don't remember hearing anything because we were across town a little bit, but just smoke came pouring through, billowing over to where we are. And and then we went out about face, you know, out this little point that was just away from all buildings. You had no idea what was going to happen. You're looking up at the Brooklyn Bridge. We're like, well, that would be a great target to take.
Yeah, that's next.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, long story short, you know, tragically, both towers come down. Everyone has to kind of wait it out. Then you couldn't see anything. You couldn't see to the wall, you know, right there that we're in this room that we're in because it was so thick. And from there, we let the smoke kind of clear. We were able to walk through this small little group of people, walk back to my apartment, and it's starting to gather. And it looks like, you know, just gray snow just accumulating on the ground. And then we were all evacuated, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours later after that, and couldn't go back home for 2.5-3 weeks. So it was a trip, you know, a wild, horrible, you know, experience. Still, I don't know if you ever truly process, you know, being on the ground, you know, for something like that. And then everything that has happened, you know, in the 20 plus years since then. During college, my plan was to go back in the military. Went did, you know, naval officer testing and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. But I promised my grandmother before I went into the Marine Corps that I would go to college and get my degree. And so that's the track that I was on. And as life happens, sometimes you just get swept up in that and take it in a different direction. And yeah, so so much of the stuff that I'm involved in these days, supporting different, you know, military groups, tie back to childhood, growing up, seeing the direct impact of that, and try to contribute in a different way because I was never boots on the ground in Afghanistan or Iraq. Mm.
But I mean, you got to be, you know, see firsthand what led to 20 years of anarchy, really.
Right.
How did that make you feel like in the moment? I mean, you lived there at the time.
Yeah.
Know the people, and we can all read about it, but understanding that chaos has got to be difficult.
It was a microcosm for what you alluded to a little while ago about unity and coming together. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember before I moved to New York City, people would say, oh, you're going to New York City? It's crazy. It's unsafe. People are just, they're not nice there. That I had lived there for less than a month, and it was the opposite of what I experienced. I had at least a handful of people ask me, hey, are you okay? Do you need anywhere to stay? There was this overwhelming outpouring of community within this big island of what 10 million plus people to strangers. Mm-hmm. And so the, like I said, America coming together was a pretty powerful thing at that point in time. And I'll never forget that aspect of out of this horrible, horrible thing that happened, how you can see the best in humanity.
Yeah, it usually takes, unfortunately, it typically takes a large act of violence or negativity to bring people together, right?
Yeah.
It's that trauma bonding kind of thing,
right?
Where we've had this shared terrible experience together, let's put our differences aside and find a way through it.
Sounds like a great business to start. How do we manufacture that? You know,
terrorism?
Yeah.
Not terrorism.
Wow, dark joke.
A lot of people already do.
Yeah. No, but just that idea and that concept.
There's a lot of ways that people do it. I mean, people regularly, routinely put themselves through hardships purposefully in order to grow, build resiliency, build community. I mean, how many Tough Mudders different variants of Tough Mudders?
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
You know? Probably five or six different ones where you get 100 people together and you suck for half an hour.
All
well fed and
I guess I don't find those very difficult. And so that's
as an example. Like to your point though, is like you've gone through such extreme circumstances that the Tough Mudder is now. Like, it's nothing.
Right.
But to some people,
fair.
That is the most challenging thing they've ever done. And that's fantastic. And it's all situational dependent, right? So how did that situation kind of re-inspire you in the military? I'm sure it did. Like, 3 years or 4 years of bullshit, right? And just, doing all this kind of, it's a horse and pony show at that point when it's peacetime, right? And then, you see this and it's got to reignite a passion, especially in the Marine mentality.
Yeah.
So you guys must have been ready for blood.
I had a gap where I didn't, like when I was going to school and, for several years after that, where I really didn't touch the military community. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people, you get out and you see it. And I had several calls from the different Marine units saying, you want to come back and do some different stuff? And I was like, well, I'm finishing this thing that I promised my family what I would do. And when I moved to San Diego, this was 2012-ish, the proximity there really got me plugged back into to the military community. And actually, when I was living in Denver a few years before that, too, I was doing some just nominal small stuff with different nonprofits and that were supporting different aspects of the military. And it was, again, like I said, when I moved to San Diego, it really got me back into, like, there are so many people at that point were 10 years in, and you could see it before that, but 10 years in, you actually have this longevity of data of like, what is the toll of warfare, of combat, of this entire generation of young people who signed up, who stopped what they were doing to go and do that. And that to me, I think is something that, now we're over 20 years in and, hindsight is 2020, as we say. And being able to proactively get after how we can support our warfighters is something I think we've done a really bad job of. Mm. When you think about it, and it's kind of a fascinating thing when we talk about Vietnam. Like knowing what we know now, to say that we couldn't foresee this and couldn't support our troops in a much better way and create community around that is kind of baffling. If you really think about it.
What do they say about history, though?
It repeats itself over and over again.
On our last couple podcasts ago, remember that? You said the exact thing.
Yeah, we tend to forget. At the end of warfare, we want to forget all the bad things.
Right.
And in turn, lose the lessons learned. It's prominently displayed in the medical community. Right. Most modern medical developments happen through warfare, right? Starting in World War I all the way up till present day, most major medical advancements happen then.
And a lot of that data gets lost when we try to figure out the war, right? So like Vietnam, a lot of crazy shit happened. There was a lot of chemical exposures, burns, you know, amputations. We could have invested the money and learned it then, but we said, we want to forget about this. So shove it aside, forget about war for a while, which means we forget about the people we have to take care of.
Yeah. And that, nowadays we have social media, which you could live track what's happening in Ukraine right now. And, you know, so everybody's so connected. Everybody talks and chats with each other. And you have recruitment numbers right now that are so incredibly low. No one wants to join the military because of things like this, where we showcase that you're not getting taken care of.
Right.
And that's an unfortunate thing is we had another guest on that said, you know, man, I haven't met a single person really, for the most part, that's regretted his military service. You know, we all, even though it sucks, and even though we have some of the most just worst memories in the military, I think internally we all appreciate that about ourselves so much. It's a salient characteristic of who we are. But at the same time, enough is enough. And I think that we're all uniting together and saying that there is a face behind the uniform for once, right? And in Vietnam, you got that. Is it as bad as that? No, but we're repeating those tendencies now. We're cutting retirements, we're cutting benefits, but yet implementing drafts. And what's the article you read today?
Yeah, I read an Army War College published a paper in the quarterly or their annual review, I think last week. I read it last night anyways. They were taking the Ukraine and Russia war into account. And if we insert American troops, they're trying to determine casualty rates. Mm-hmm. And their estimations are 3,600 a day. So between, for all of GWAT, you know, we lost total casualties, not just deaths, but total casualties were 50,000 over the course of 22 years. And this means that in the course of 2 weeks, we would repeat that.
Yeah, going wild.
Russia. And they started looking ahead with the IRR, you know, the inactive ready reserve, the regular reserve, and the active duty components. And they're looking like they have to recruit up to 800 people a day, starting the first of the FY, which is on Saturday,
right?
October 1st, that's coming up. Yeah. And they're looking to say, we can't do this. So we're looking back to the 70s, 80s style of a partial conscription. All volunteer force is going to be gone. So they are actively pushing measures towards a partial conscription.
What's I think, coming back to, there's a lot there to unpack that you guys were talking about.
let's take a tactical pause here.
the recruitment piece, I think, is something in that direct line to the all-volunteer force, of course, and the sustainability of that is something that I'm personally, one of the reasons why we launched MCOM is a part of that. And I think it comes back to what you were talking about. The general perception of military service in America is all-time low at the moment, what it was the past 20, 30 years. And I think that it's been almost a self-inflicted wound for how we have chosen to put veterans on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of us that are out there kicking ass and flourishing and doing incredibly well, but for a number of reasons, we don't do a good job of celebrating that group. And I think that the general American population sees the broken veteran who needs help. And we need to help those members of our community 100%. Very, very important. But when you think of how, you know, in some instances, you know, philanthropy, like I said, it's been almost a self-inflicted wound. You know, we showcase that a lot.
Yeah.
And listen, a lot of the organizations I've supported have done it. So this is not a critique. This is more just an observation. Mm-hmm. You know, you do that because you want people to donate and support it. But in doing so, we are we're undermining the greater opportunity of military service. And I would challenge anyone to point out to me a greater opportunity of upward mobility in this country than military service. When you factor in the training that you get, mm-hmm. you factor in the GI Bill, when you factor in zero down home purchasing,
healthcare,
and a whole host of things. It's
generational parking.
Exactly. it's generational wealth building if you're coming from nothing or very little to apply it to your family and everything you want to do. And no one talks nearly enough about that for young people to think about whether they want to or don't want to come into military service.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it on the head. Mm-hmm. If I have a strong, powerful veteran that I showcase at a nonprofit, why am I supporting this organization, right?
Yeah.
And then it becomes the pony show.
Right.
And in the beginning, I think that was a really big thing. And that's why I think it's really important for veterans to lead.
Yes.
Veteran and military support organizations. Because you have to have an understanding of what that service is and what it means to be a veteran at the end of the day. Because it's really easy to take advantage of. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but nonprofits are not built for the public. But yet we have to raise from the public. We have to take care of these individuals that need it. So I think that's that. I mean, that's something that we're working on too, and work very, very closely with supporting military entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And it's supporting those that are powerful, that are going to be drivers in the communities that they're in.
Right.
So how do we change into that perspective a little bit?
I talk about this a lot. So putting my kind of investor venture capital hat on. So if you look at the current landscape that's out there, there's no investment fund that's focused on solving the problems of post-service. Mm-hmm. You think about the amount, think about the hundreds of billions of dollars and all the massive corporation, private corporations that we, the military, leans on to deploy our forces at a moment's notice all around the globe. Mm-hmm. It's part of the whole supply chain. How do you want to characterize it? Can't do it without, you know, those groups. We do an atrocious job of leveraging the private sector for post-service transition, those types of things. That, I think, is, and when I say opportunity, it's an opportunity because it's just a void. Mm-hmm. You know, who's the leader in veteran technology services? Or when you think of that for serving us, who's the leading company in that? I mean, from a banking standpoint, you know, there's USAA and NavyFed, those types of things, sure. But that's all the way through, you know, the lifespan. Think about, okay, if we talk about, okay, who are the leading companies that help us go kill terrorists? Well, you've got Lockheed's, you've got Boeing, Raytheon, countless contractors. That's exactly right. But why don't we have those same level of brands with that same level of technology and scale supporting people once you transition out, and their families, and that entire community? Again, it's a giant, it's money, but that's where we're setting up a fund to actually lean into that and focus on that. So it's not about, it's important, but it's not about hiring or investing in a veteran-owned business. Mm-hmm. That's a nice to have.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we don't care about that. We care about a really brilliant founder who's passionate about solving something around veteran suicide. Mm-hmm. If you think about the veteran and well-being, take a holistic approach, you've got these different ways. You've got financial health. Mm-hmm. You've got aspects of mental health, physical health, family support, career. You know, if you think about all these from a red being the worst, yellow, and then green being the best, mm-hmm. you know, you need to have a healthy blend of that, or you want them mostly to be green.
Yes.
But we don't measure where we are mentally and how that impacts all those things, or how those impact the individual veteran or active duty service member. We do a really bad job of that right now. Mm-hmm. And you can't manage what you can't measure. And so why don't take the guessing game out of mental health, or if someone is moving down that, you know, area to suicide, just like we do for fit reps or something else. Mm-hmm. There's just so many things that we can be doing better that aren't necessarily wildly expensive. But even one other example I'll give you is, look at the plethora of services that are out there for veterans. There's honestly too many to like navigate and figure out what's right for you or what you're into. It could be equestrian, it could be dogs, it could be
sailing, hunting. Yeah. I mean, you name it, skydiving.
Yeah, skydiving.
You name it, you right. do.
And then right. you couple that with the other VSOs, whether it's the Legion or the VFW or the VA. Well, how do I know what's right for me? How do I know what I'm eligible for? It's, and depending on where you're coming from, it's not easy to navigate these things, depending on, you know, exactly right. So,
well, it's the invention of the internet, right? Yeah. It's like we have all this access, yes. all this information,
right.
but how do we access it?
Right. It's not collated.
Exactly yeah. right. Exactly right. So, we're looking at opportunities for those businesses to serve our community much better. Mm-hmm. And there's just, it's wide open. And if you think about it, so just an example, the VA spends about $380 billion in healthcare every year. Mm-hmm. You don't have to create some huge, you solve a tiny, tiny part of eliminating friction for access to care or benefits, whatever that looks like, and you create a $100 million plus business.
Yeah.
So I was having a conversation recently with somebody, and they're like, well, those types of things are typically reserved for philanthropy. And I'm like, yes, philanthropy will absolutely always play a role in that. But philanthropy by itself is not working.
That's
look at the data.
That is a problem to me when people say that. The gap should be bridged by philanthropists, right? No.
Yeah.
That's there to support. Yes. It is not a solution to the problem. Yeah. And we see this all the time is the VA reaches out to Robert Irvine Foundation for purchasing these mobility devices for certain individuals. And I'm like, and I get very frustrated with them because I'm like, why aren't you doing it? Oh, well, you know, the VA is just stressed out. We don't have the money for it. So you're asking us to do it so that we could purchase it for you and you could prescribe it on your end. And they're like, yeah. What's wrong with that?
Everything is wrong with that. Yes, that's something that's set up for a private for-profit company that's incentivized to operate at a high level, scale. That's when we can make sure that things are getting to the and there's more access on a broader scale. Same thing on access to care. The VA can partner so much more with care delivery systems all over the country to make sure that the services are available to so many more veterans and their families that are out there. And that's not taking a shot at the VA. The men and women that work there work incredibly hard, are incredibly passionate, but they're part of this massive system that it's really, really hard to affect change on that, which is why I think that the private sector's so well equipped now and today. You know, we always talk about the government always has money to send everyone to war, but not when they come back. But there's the money's there. It's just a function of reorienting how those dollars are deployed so that, again, they're not coming to the Robert Irvine Foundation, a nonprofit, that's not set up or has the infrastructure to do all of those things.
Yeah, frustrating. So let's summarize that. What's a few things that you're working on right now, just to name a couple, that you see are the major, major problems that we need to alleviate?
Yeah, so the two in particular, and there's a lot underneath each one of these. Mm-hmm. One is MCON, which you mentioned, and I say that that's working to alleviate some of these problems because it's really focused on changing military culture. And us having conversations about military culture, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We all know there's some really great things about military experience and some really gnarly things about military experience for individuals, families, and so on. And so that's something that I'm really excited about. And then the other project is the Be the One program for the American Legion. It's their number one initiative right now, and it's all about suicide prevention. And it's the big part of it. There's two things to this. It's challenging the stigma. It's okay to not be okay, which is something that kind of ties back to culture, raising your hand and again, treating mental health differently. It should be treated the same way. If you bang up your ankle, your knee, let's use science, guys, to fix this. And you eliminate that, the ambiguity that exists there. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is that Be the One that's action oriented very intentionally is each and every one of us can be the one to identify somebody who's struggling and help each other. And that's powerful, it's actually not just for the veteran community in any way, shape, or form. It's actually for the broader American public to understand it.
Sure.
And the reason for that is the density of understanding and relatability to military service in this country is much lower than, say, in Israel. And, you know, if you guys are exactly right. And so their rates of suicide and mental health are, in the same way that we deal with it, are lower. But because there's better peer understanding. But if you think about it, unless you're involved in a military or veteran related, you know, profession or volunteer, something like that, you know, your chances are you don't work with a lot of veterans at all.
Yeah.
Or you just don't know somebody is. And also, how are you supposed to know that Dave or Susan are struggling or their performance at work normally, they're kind of kicking ass and then they're going through something? You have no idea what it might be related to. And so, like I said, there's just a whole host of things of us just being cognizant of that and educating the broader public about how you can be the one to help somebody.
So what you're saying is the suggestion for partial conscription could be a good thing.
Yeah. You know what? Everyone who hasn't served would round you up.
Yeah.
True story. Oh, my goodness.
Not to denigrate.
No. Right.
I completely agree with what you're saying. Yeah. People are just, they don't understand.
Right.
And honestly, the last 22 years of war, they've been overexposed to it.
Right.
It's hard to have sympathy when you've been told to be sympathetic for so, so long, right, and continuously over and over with no results, right?
Yeah.
The American people, they look at it and they have a hard time being sympathetic with it. And I understand that standpoint. When you're focusing on the individual, though, you should have sympathy for the individual. Not having sympathy for the system, I can get that.
Yeah. Right.
But for the individual, absolutely. And being able to pick those pieces out, like you said, like your coworkers, if you're noticing they're having a bad day or you know these things about them, it's okay to ask. It's okay to inquire. And that's right. Mainly the reason this podcast exists in the first place.
Yeah.
Want to educate the public.
Well, and to your point, it's like sympathy is a word that I would maybe like even back away from a little bit, and understanding is something I think is really important, because I mean, sympathy, you know what I mean? There's that perception of like, no, man, I'm fine. Back up.
Don't feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yes.
I guess empathy or understanding.
Yes. Yeah.
Better description.
Yeah. Right.
We should also talk about kind of the what we brushed past too is overindulgence. The American population has a tendency to overcorrect, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about mental health, like the same thing over and over again, we have now an endless amount of resources that, I mean, there is a solution for every mental health issue that you have out there. There's a nonprofit that specializes in that. To name a few, like Camp Hope for Witch, if you are just so done, they put you like in a military style barracks, wake you up at 6 a.m., you know, formation, blah, 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 no phones, blah, blah. There is something out there for everyone. But how do we give the access to those? And two, how do we prevent those from taking advantage of it so that we could really specialize those programs to help those who need it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where it comes down to better tools that allow us to filter through that. I mean, look at, and on transparency, I mean, Amazon is so powerful because it gives you access to almost anything that you want.
Yeah.
It provides customer reviews for anything you want. Mm-hmm. I'm not choosing this product, but it has 2 stars. This product has 5 stars. Mm-hmm. You'd otherwise not know that at all. And so I think there are lots of opportunities to think about, again, these plethora of like services that we have to figure out, is this right for me? Because when you just described Camp Hope, I don't care how bad I'm doing mentally, that sounds terrible to me. I don't want to do that. But there's a different version that might be great for me or what I'm into. There's also something for the person who like might want to write a big check to go on some, you know, adventure, you know, the luxury adventure stuff, or people, or there's a lot of the services where, you know, Teams guys or Green Berets or Rangers will run men and women through the gauntlet of like, hey, here's various scenarios you're going to go through for a weekend. Corporate America pays for that stuff all the time.
Doing that next weekend.
Yeah, there you go. So I think there's just a lot of room for us to think differently about it. And like I said, the longest time, we've been spoon-fed that, hey, like the DOD, the VA, that philanthropy is the answer. And we've seen now that it's not the answer. Those mm-hmm. stakeholders play a very, very important role in what we're doing, mm-hmm. but there's this wide open space for us to do so much more. And that's something that I would love for our community to think more about. How do you, founders, I mean, if you look at the most compelling things in health, where does all the money for philanthropy come from? It comes from really talented entrepreneurs mm-hmm. building businesses and then donating capital and putting it back into that. So I think we could just get a lot smarter in our community about that. And the beautiful thing is the rates of veterans launching businesses is significantly higher than the average American. So we're already equipped from a mindset to do this. Mm-hmm. We just need to, like I said, reorient the problems that we're focused on.
I agree. I think it could be twofold as well, right? And I don't want to get into the political side, but the utilization of funds, right?
Yes.
That needs to be way better. I'm not going to get on a pedestal about that. We all agree.
Yeah. Like,
they need to use the funds more wisely.
Right.
We'll leave that at that. But is there an opportunity for something like a public benefit corporation to come out instead of just a nonprofit? You can have a for-profit entity that's primary purpose is to serve the public, right?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people don't know about those, that they even exist in the first place. Is that something that can help bridge the gap in a more feasible, effective way, in your opinion?
I think there's a couple things there. B Corps are a great example of that. I mean, look at Patagonia. If you guys have followed, you know, what the founder of Patagonia has done, donating, I think it's predominantly climate change, massive sums of money to that. And so you can do the same thing here. The beautiful thing is, if you're starting a business, it's yours. So you can, you can be as idealistic as you would want to. You can blend capitalism and that piece, that doing good piece of it. In fact, I think the most successful companies align themselves with community mm-hmm. cause. There's a reason why impact investing is such a huge thing right now. Mm-hmm. It's because, in particular, the younger generation, and even our generation, you want to do something that matters.
Yeah.
Just, you know, making a ton of money is fine, but it's great. But it also can leave you empty because it may not be that fulfilling.
Yeah.
It's great to have nice things, but you know, the all the trips and all the toys, you can still be a very hollow person if you don't have that purpose in your life that drives you. And that purpose piece is something that I think we don't talk enough about that in our mm-hmm. community. We all joined because there was a purpose
for a purpose.
Yeah. And then you get out and the aspect of, you know, I think we have a tendency to focus on career for purpose,
mm-hmm.
but like you may never, ever get any purpose out of your career. And you may be a partner at a law firm or pick whatever, whatever example you want, financially incredibly lucrative, or you just have a job that pays enough for the bills. But finding your purpose can come from being a husband, a father, being involved, a coach. There's so many things that you can volunteering for the Boy Scouts, again, whatever it is, but you've got to be really thoughtful about what you're going to do there, because that's going to help you stop looking to your left and your right. Yeah. Grass is always greener. And you know what? It's okay. If you're never going to get a ton of satisfaction out of your job, then just know that about yourself.
Yeah.
Self-identify exactly. with that, accept yeah. it, and then you can actually search for the things that are going to fill your cup.
Yeah. Now, there's a good documentary by Werner Herzog called Happy People. Mm. You heard of that?
Mm.
It's short. I think it's an hour 15. It's about people who live like north of Siberia. It's this little fishing and trapping community,
yeah.
but they're the happiest people in the world. They live in the middle of nowhere. They have, you know, snowmobiles and regular sure. stuff. They live in the middle of nowhere. Every day you have to work because that's the only way that you yeah. eat. It's incredibly cold. You have to put in the time there.
Right.
But it is the most isolated group in the world, and it is also statistically the happiest group of people in the entire planet that's been studied.
Right.
And these people, all they do all day long is work. They don't have internet. They don't have TV. You know, but they are happy.
Yeah.
They're sufficient because they found purpose.
Right. And
like you said, a lot of people are missing.
Yeah. Sebastian Younger, you know, in some of his books, he talks about that. Like, you're like, wait a minute, why are these people having such a good time in this horrible place in the middle of Afghanistan? And then, you know, also another example is during World War II, during the bombings in London,
mm-hmm.
you know, everyone thought that the suicide rates were going to jump dramatically. In fact, they went down because people had a purpose. There was community.
Mm-hmm.
It's this weird thing that binds us together.
Peace time is always the highest time for suicide rates. It's
yeah.
very, 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 it's very interesting.
Yes.
Challenge.
Yeah.
And I don't know if interesting is the right word, but it's kind of baffling to know that. And it is, it's sense of purpose, right? When you have a mission to drive forward to, you know, 9/11, who kind of reunifies the country, reignites them to band together against a common enemy. And it's the same thing. If you have a purpose and that purpose is to execute on that mission, you're going to find yourself in a lot happier of a situation.
Yeah.
You know, we had a guy, Bear Cattle Company, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Bear Cattle Company, come on.
Yeah.
And he does a like 10-month program for, you know, to Yellowstone types of stuff, to train you how to rope and ride and, you know, saddle the horse and, you know, go ranch to ranch and just work. And he says that these guys, and it's for vets as well, but these guys find themselves in the happiest situations their entire life all over again. They're camping under the stars. And, you know, that's not for everybody. That's not, you know, for the veteran entrepreneurs that want to go out there and kind of compete in that capitalist world and blah, blah, blah. But for some people, that's all you need. And it's just the definition of what purpose is for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. Yeah, how we also maintain that connection once you go through that 10-month program, I think is something that's really important as well. And there are some businesses out there that have tried to do it, but you know, I think if you look at, you know, other communities, there's just different ways that we can support ourselves, you know, more effectively.
Yeah.
But I think it's fascinating when you look at. Are you guys familiar with Face the Fight by chance?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, USA Humana launched that.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the event in D.C. when they launched it a couple months ago. And I think it's a 10-year, by 20, the goal they for did. Face the Fight.
I mean, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. By 2030, the goal is to dramatically reduce veteran suicide. there's an amazing coalition that's part of it. The American Legion's part of it, in addition to just countless organizations. And they've already raised $45 million for different grants and a whole host of things for that. And I remember asking them, you know, why is it going to be different? And Appleberg, the SVP of Military Affairs over there, he's like, well, this time, the big difference for this is we want to engage the private sector and employers. And because we don't, like we talked about earlier, we don't live in our, a lot of us, we're not in touch with, you know, the average veteran with another veteran all the time.
Sure.
And so we've done a really bad job of engaging the broader population with that. And so again, to your point on the programs like that, there needs to be a connection piece that ties you back in or something like that. Or I don't know. I don't have the answer, which is why we need other, much smarter people to come up with these types of things. But that, I think that's just another area of opportunity for our community to do some special things.
Yeah, and so behold Military Convention, MCON, which is a solution to kind of consolidating all these resources, all of these businesses, all these like-minded individuals to come together and be able to share and talk and break bread together and do some cool military shit.
Yep. The whole purpose of MCON is to celebrate service and military culture. Mm-hmm. And I want to place a lot of emphasis on military culture because in my opinion, and I think it's widely accepted, culture is the most powerful way to affect change. And, you know, we've been talking about a lot of things over the course of this conversation that we need to evolve and change within, you know, the active duty veteran community. And I don't think there's any greater way to do that than, again, reshaping that narrative around what it means to serve, celebrating service, celebrating the individuals who are thriving in life and talking about how they're able to do that. And, you know, we've got a whole host of experiences from airsoft, archery, like workouts with, you know, former MMA pro fighters. Mm-hmm. We have a big whole culinary experience, music lineup. We are going to have also, I'm really excited about our culture and learning panels and things of that nature, where we've got, you know, authors, actors, you might be a CEO, but, you know, the common thread is you served or you are serving our community in some way, shape, or form, and it's about storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a CEO of a company, you're not talking about how you built your business. You're talking about who you are and what that journey was and those lessons. You know, it's a consumer event, and 16 and up, and that's by design. Well, you know, a couple things. When we talk about the perception of, you know, military service, young people need to want to serve. They need to look up to and aspire that. I knew so many people growing up that I thought were incredible human beings who had served in the military, and that was one of the reasons why I felt great about it. But those centers of influence, which we all are, I think the veteran community can do a much more effective job of influencing young people about coming back to serve. And quite frankly, when we're talking about, you know, the whole possibility of conscription, like, that it's on us to ensure that doesn't happen with young people that are directly part of our lives or people that you encounter, you know, along the way. Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of that. And I'm not trying to draw a line that, you know, this event is going to reshape national security or recruiting or anything like that. But big cultural events have a tendency to do that when you look at them, you know, and that's our goal for MCON, is to bring in, who are the latest authors? Who are the latest authors? What are the authors, actors, business icons, influencers, people that we look up to, that some people aspire to be. Maybe they bridged the gap of military service. They did. They served. Maybe they didn't. But they're touched in some way, shape, or form. Parent, family member, or so on, and it left an imprint on them. And I know countless people like that. It's that question piece and that story there always fascinates me when you're having a conversation with someone and on its face had no idea that, you know, they were like connected to the military some way, shape, or form. And then you start actually having a conversation and you learn, and it opens up so many things about.
And that's it too, is you do face in the military a really closed knit group of individuals, right? That are closed-minded to those outside of their zone.
Right.
So I think, like, what you're doing here with instilling culture into the military kind of emphasizes that open-mindedness as well. Mm-hmm. So now you have a platform where people are really receptive to listening and opening up and this is going to make a tremendous impact. And what is the projected number of individuals?
Just about 2,000 for our inaugural year.
Okay.
Yeah, and then at scale, we fast forward 4 or 5 years, we think this is a 40 to 50,000, you know, person event.
Yeah.
Our goal is to make it the largest celebration around Veterans Day every year.
And that's not to include like the amount of people rolling in and out and attending, and this is at one time. Like,
yes.
I mean, this is a long weekend. So you're affecting the lives of thousands and thousands of people here. So it's got to be pretty exciting. But the logistics of working with all those companies, what do you see the difference between, you know, creating a military event and working with, say, a venture capital firm?
Very different, yes. So, it's funny. So, you know, I think by far more people are familiar with, you know, they may not understand the mechanics, but they've heard of venture capital. They know what it is.
Sure.
I think the funny, dirty little secret around, you know, building, you know, large scale events and building community around that is that it's the biggest industry you've never heard of.
Mm.
But all of us, depending on what you've done in your life, have been to some type of event or some type of corporate event. And it's a huge, huge industry, global, and it represents trillions of dollars of commerce every year in these marketplaces that are created. And so putting on an event like this, you know, my background, media, technology, live entertainment. And so at one point in time, business partner and I, we own 40 different media brands and live events, since sold them. But, you know, our largest one had just shy of 14,000 people that would go to it every year. Wow. And it is an amazing experience, but it's also an incredibly stressful experience to build and launch these things, because you always know that some people are going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to think it's okay, and some people aren't going to be happy. And it's just the nature of the beast. And it's different than a product, where somebody orders a product and they get it at their home. An event, they're there physically.
Yeah,
and so you are exposed to that raw emotion in some instances of the good, the bad, and the ugly. But it's like anything new. There's iterations, and you have to build on that, and you're going to have lessons learned, and you're going to reemphasize the things that went really, really well and minimize the things that didn't go as well. But like I said, it's all part of the process, and you gotta roll with the punches. I mean, you guys know it all too well with, you know, Terra Arma, what you guys are building as well.
Yeah, that's incredible. So let's talk about the date, the location,
yeah,
and what to expect when you get there.
Sure.
Right, we kind of brushed past.
Yeah,
you,
yeah, know, the details.
Little author, little airsoft, yeah, thing. I wanna know the details.
November 10th through 12th in Las Vegas. We'll kick off in the afternoon around 4 o'clock that evening, welcome party, reception, food, music DJ that evening. And then we got Vegas as a backdrop to go out and get after it, which will be really fun. Saturday, Sunday, we're going to have a car show. The Marine Corps is bringing in a bunch of Humvees,
awesome,
and 5 tons, which is going to be really cool.
So you get to see some military.
Yeah, we're going to have some weapon systems as well that they're going to have on display, which will be fun. Then we actually have a songwriting workshop. We've got a couple of, like, they've had top 20 hits songwriters that are doing a workshop with actual veterans, and then they're going to perform those songs at MCON, which is going to be really, really cool.
That's
so some
rad,
super hands-on stuff there, which is going to be killer. We have a whiskey tasting whole lounge set up, mm-hmm, where if you guys know Uncle Nearest Whiskey, you know, by chance, that's going to be the fastest growing whiskey brand in America. And the connection to the story is amazing. We don't have time to get into it now, but we should check it out after the podcast. Uncle Nearest.
Uncle Nearest.
Yeah, fascinating story in terms of the history of all that.
Mm.
And then we've got just tons of resources between, you know, the American Legion being there, groups like Veteran Benefits Guide, Roger, brand new bank that's all digital and virtual.
Hmm.
And you guys are going to be there with Terra Arma, with T-Mobile as one of our brand partners, Regiment, one of the largest gaming companies. So it's really designed to choose your own adventure. You can hang out and relax. You can listen to a lot of the different talks that are going on, you know, ranging from people like Sebastian Younger to Dean Stott to John Wayne Troxell. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on of really incredible, you know, individuals, men and women who have served. And then, you know, we've got, like I said, entertaining archery set up. So it's, like I said, it's designed to be a festival. And we really want to unpack the current zeitgeist of military culture. It was different 5 years ago. It's going to be different another 5 years. And there's this ebb and flow based on what conflict is happening in the world and how we're involved in that. And that to me is something that's so important for us to think about, because it helps us inform how we want to appeal to young people. Mm-hmm. What's going on with the military, with military culture, and more importantly, allows us to have real conversations. The military experience is a edgy, messy, dirty thing. I think we can all agree with that. Some of it less dirty than others, depending on, you know, your job, branch of service. But our conversations need to reflect that. And I think sometimes a lot of events in the military are a little too corporate and polished to have real conversations.
Yeah.
Like, as an example, talking about military suicide, veteran suicide, is a dark, hard thing. But you have to allow yourself to laugh and have some levity in the conversation. Otherwise, it's going to be a dark suck fest. And the people who do want to support the individuals who are grappling with that are going to get burned out pretty quickly if you don't give yourself a break.
Yes.
And that's one example. But, you know, we all know this. We laugh at the darkest, most horrible things. It's the nature of the beast. And it's something that our community understands, but it's not dissimilar from firefighters, first responders, ER doctors and nurses.
You look at things like a battery, you know, as well. There's certain things that are going to drain you. And that's a topic that's going to, no matter how strong you are, no matter how much trauma you face, adversity as well, like when you're just in a room talking about that over and over and trying to find the solutions to it, why is that number jumping above? It's going to get to you.
Right. And are you guys familiar with and jumping back to culture for a second, and how we actually affect change and get people, inspire people to get off the couch or take action. You know what's never done that? Is like a shitty PSA announcement. That's never inspired somebody to dial a number to get help or do something. But you know what does? Is hearing inspiring stories from people that you believe in, you care about. Are you guys familiar with the Netflix effect by chance?
No.
So the Netflix effect refers to entertainment, pop culture, serving as one of the most powerful ways to get people to take action. So two examples. Formula One Drive to Survive, that television show on Netflix. 52% of fans in North America are fans because of that television show. Mm-hmm. Because it taps into the storytelling of those individual drivers, the teams. You are emotionally invested in the outcome. It's not just a logo in a car. The other one.
Same thing if you put $100 down on a game, let's say football game.
Yeah.
How much more invested are you into that game, into the players, into what's going on?
Absolutely.
Because you have something in it yourself. Mm-hmm. And once you're involved in that culture and you get into that culture, and then all you have to have is the veteran name to participate in this, you think you're a part of something else. And that instills that purpose. It drives that. And you're going to see a lot of inspiration and you know, people just making huge, vast changes after that. So life-changing impacts.
Yeah, it really is. And the other example is The Queen's Gambit. If you guys ever saw that show.
Chess.
Yeah, chess. Chess sales increased 1,000% after that television show. Do you think there's any type of campaign that the chess industry could have embarked upon that would have netted that result?
No.
Not
exposure to the culture.
Exactly right. And so those just two examples, I think, just illustrate the power of how we can tap into culture to really affect change with our community from the top all the way to the bottom, regardless of whether you're a contractor, a plumber, a CEO, it doesn't much matter. We have so much, we control our destiny so much more than we give ourselves credit for. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the purpose and the goal for the event is to instill that and to share that and just see stories of men and women who've done that. And you see it all the time, but being able to sit there and roll your sleeves up with just these incredible, iconic people is really powerful. And then also throw back a drink with them or throw some arrows down range or hit some targets with airsoft or whatever it is. Again, a gathering like this is truly designed to bring our tribe together.
Mm, amazing. Well, that's great. Where can we find you? Where can we find the information?
mcon.live, mcon.live. But all
Instagram or anything?
There's Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. We've got channels everywhere.
Amazing. What's final words to the audience? Like words of wit, inspiration?
Yeah.
You know, how many tickets to buy?
Buy your tickets today for the low price. I think that the biggest thing that I am excited about when I wake up every day, regardless of whether it's MCON, a company that we're invested in, or the work that I'm doing with the Be the One Program with the Legion or Face the Fight, is there's so many more opportunities that we can be doing and taking advantage of that can solve these problems. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at mental health, suicide, and food subsidies for families of active duty service members, we can solve these problems. There's no this Chinese wall. There's not, it doesn't exist actually, because it's the private sector is already serving the military community in some huge way. Mm-hmm. So let's focus on doing it for once post service, or for the families that are serving, or when you're transitioning or moving to a new place. We can create the companies of tomorrow that can solve these problems. Mm-hmm. And again, whether that's a nonprofit, for profit, or a blend of that, B Corp, it doesn't much matter. We have these opportunities. We just have to look at them and identify what it is, and bring in other really talented, smart people to help solve these things.
Hit it on the head too. Is you know, we talk about this all the time. One thing the military is really great at is collaborative efforts. Mm-hmm. You know, we old school mentality, and this is why we're seeing such a shift in business as well. Old school mentality is, this is my silo. If you have the similar product, I'm going to kick your lemonade stand down. And that's right. Not how we work anymore. And we're starting to see nonprofits work with for-profits, and for-profits, you know, working with VC capital. And it, now people are communicating, and that's what we got to do. So it's amazing to have you on and inspire some of the military culture through this event. We'll be there as well. So yeah, we're excited to do it. We have a live podcast there as well. So that'll be fun.
Excited about it.
But, thanks for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yep. Thank you guys. Yeah, really appreciate it. Love the conversation.
Same here. You're a very inspirational person. I'm very, very thankful that you came out today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your time.
Thanks, Jens.
This has been the Medevac Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for watching. As always, you can find us at medevacpodcast.com or at our Instagram page. It's the easiest way to reach us at Medevac Podcast, MEDEVAC podcast.com. That's it. See you next time.
See you next time.